hour number two of Overtime coming at you live here from the Fan Run Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville. This segment is brought to you by Knoxville Stone Interiors, your local go-to kitchen renovation experts here. They've been in business for over a decade now, serving Knoxville and the surrounding area. Three generations of experience in the natural stone countertop industry on their staff. Granite, quartz, marble, recycled glass, whatever the countertop surface, they have the solution for your kitchen or your bath or anywhere in between. They got hundreds and hundreds of options available to you. You can go check out the showroom, 3900 Middlebrook Pike. Give them a call, 865-971-5800. Get a free in-home estimate when you call. Most installations take less than a day. And hey, this is the perfect time for you to do that kitchen renovation that you've been putting off for a few months, especially if you got kids. You send the kids back to school. You don't have to worry about them being all up and down the house throughout the summer months. They're out of your hair now. Now you have time to take care of that remodel. And hey, they're not just good for remodeling. If you just bought a house and want to get like a fresh start, they're good for that too. If you're in the business of flipping homes as well, they can be a part of the entire complete package too. So definitely check out KSI there. KnoxStoneInteriors.com is the website to check out their products and services. Knoxville Stone Interiors, 9,000 kitchen makeovers and counting. Colin McCormick, what do we have on the recruiting front?
We've got a few things. Nothing great or groundbreaking, but a few things. As we know, the crown jewel of Coach Pruitt's first class, recruiting class that is, J.J. Peterson has yet to make it to campus.
Boo.
There's been speculation if he'll even make it at all. You know, we heard he was supposed to be here in June, then pushed back to July. It's mid-August. He's still not here. But Dan Harrelson of VolsWire.com apparently has an update regarding J.J. He put a short little piece up on VolsWire.com earlier today. He says Tennessee will practice for the 11th time today during fall training camp. Fall semester classes begin in 1 week on August 22nd, and linebacker J.J. Peterson of the 2018 signing class is still working on getting to UT for the upcoming season. Peterson's high school head coach, Rush Probst of Colquitt County, down in Georgia, told VolsWire that the Tennessee commit is still working on getting to UT before classes begin. Probst is quoted saying, he will be there hopefully by the time school starts at Tennessee. He is working every day to get there. So with classes starting a week from today, the 22nd, that may be one of the first sightings we see of JJ. If he's not here by the time classes start, it's not going to happen. So that'll be something to watch. We'll know within the next week if he makes it to campus and the team or not.
Man, the JJ stuff, that's coming down to the wire.
I don't understand why it's taking so long.
Does he even exist?
That's a good question. Man, yeah, it might
like,
be a,
this is like Kaiser Soze or something like that from The Usual Suspects.
It might like, be
what?
Like, you
is
know,
he a legend? Is he a myth?
Might be another case of the Manti Te'o girlfriend.
Did he ever exist at all?
Maybe.
Did Rush Probst just make up a player?
Is Coach Pruitt just trying to get us excited? And
hey, Rush Probst, he has a history of trying to a lot of people. He had that entire second family.
It's true.
So he can probably just make a fake player.
Yeah. That's something to watch, as we've been watching all summer. Just a week left in the saga, it seems. Final thing on here, it was, you know, we talked about Chris Bogle yesterday. I sent a video to y'all after the show last night talking about his decision on where he is going. Kind of got me down a little bit. Kind of got me down because it seemed like Tennessee was on the up for him. But in the video, Tennessee wasn't mentioned once. The guys interviewing him talked about Ole Miss, how interested he is in Ole Miss. They pointed out that he was wearing Alabama gear during the interview. Don't like that. And then they also talked about his sister, which, according to Chris, he's quoted in saying, she wants me to stay home. She wants me to go to Miami, which that's also been a big one of the big programs after him, too. He also said in the video that it's going to come down between he Chris and then his sister on making the decision. So it sounds like the sister has a lot of pull in where he's going. In the video, he also says she goes to FAMU, you know, Florida A&M. So obviously she wants him to stay in state just to be closer. But, you know, we'll see. Hopefully somebody can sway her and, you know, send him up to Rocky Top. But I don't know. Have to wait and see. And then another thing on Bogle, I sent it to y'all as well today, y'all being Tanner and Daniel. He tweeted out earlier this morning. I can't remember exactly what it said because it's gone. But it was something to the effect of tomorrow is going to be a big day. And, of course, you know, everybody's thinking of that's going to be when he commits. Went back to look at it, and it's gone. So I don't know if that was, you know, just an accident, him tweeting it out. Mm-hmm. If it was something completely different other than his recruiting, I don't know. But, I mean, being such a big-time target, big-time athlete, you can only think tomorrow's going to be his commit date. So that could be something to watch.
Sounds like Pruitt's not going to get him.
Yeah, after watching that video last night, all the hopes and dreams I had about landing him just went away.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah.
I mean, not much more you can say about that. Hopefully he doesn't go to an SEC school.
Yeah. Just, I mean, if
go,
he goes,
go to Miami.
Exactly. If he goes anywhere, go to Miami, because he's very interested in Ole Miss and Alabama.
Play under that good Christian man, Mark Richt.
Yes.
That's all you have to do. Well, that sucks. That puts a damper on things just a little bit, but you can't get them all.
No. You'd like to have him, though. He's a stud.
And that's one of those can't-miss guys, but, yeah. I mean,
it's hard to pull those. It's hard to pull those big-time prospects out of Florida when one of those programs is doing so well.
Well, that and, two, if you have somebody who is in their family and somebody like his sister who he appears to have an extremely close relationship with,
mm-hmm.
when she's saying that she has a lot of input in the decision and she wants him to stay in state.
Yeah.
And possibly go to Miami.
Yeah.
Fighting an uphill battle.
I mean, he even said that his mom didn't even have that big of an influence more than his sister.
That's crazy.
He said in the video, he also said that they're more like twins. They're just all about each other.
That was going to be my next question. Like, are they actual twins? But I guess that answers it.
She's already in college. Yeah.
They're like twins.
So maybe a year or two, maybe even 3 years apart, but just very close.
What can you do?
Start recruiting that sister, man. You want a full ride to UT too? Come on.
Come on. We'll transfer.
We've got you.
We'll take care of your transfer. No, not a problem.
Yeah. Come on.
Oh, well. And that does it for today's roundup.
That's it.
All right. Well, sour ending, but oh, well. Hopefully some, maybe there will be a big surprise tomorrow.
I'm hoping so. But
or maybe we'll get news of somebody else tomorrow.
Yeah. I mean, probably so. One thing that I think I mentioned to you earlier, although he gave love in the video to the other three programs, his profile picture on Twitter is still at Neyland Stadium. So I'm holding on to that.
That's funny.
I'm holding on to that.
Tomorrow he'll get on Twitter. He's like, oh, let me just change this real quick. Hashtag new profile pic. He's right in the middle of, what the hell is that stadium called now? Hard Rock Stadium.
He's got down Miami. He's got the turnover chain on.
Doing the U. Yeah. Can't wait. Cannot wait. Well, let's get some good news here. Let's get some praise for a current player on Tennessee's staff.
Mm.
That current player being Keller Crist.
Mm-hmm.
And before I get into this quote here, want to also let it be known that Keller Crist was named to the 2018 Johnny Unitas Golden Arm Award watch list.
Yeah.
So it's still watch list season. Those are still rolling out as the regular season quickly approaches, but getting some love there. He may not even be your starting quarterback, but he's still getting some love.
I mean, he's definitely talented. Definitely has a talented arm. Yeah. But, I mean, it's interesting since it is such a close quarterback battle that he is being mentioned on these lists.
For him getting it love, and I haven't seen Garantano being named to any type of watch list.
Exactly.
So going back to what I was originally going to say, Keller Crist, of course, a transfer from Stanford that has been David Shaw's program for a while now. Very successful tenure out there in Palo Alto. I do believe I said that correctly.
Mm-hmm.
They're around the San Francisco Bay Area. Whatever. They're out there on the West Coast. He being David Shaw, had a recent interview with ESPN's Ivan Mizell for the Campus Conversation podcast. And he was talking about one of his final pieces of advice for Keller Crist as a member of Stanford. talked about how he told Killer Chris that he would not start for Stanford, but he believes he has the talent to compete at the highest level of not only college football, but also the NFL. And this is a quote from Shaw in the middle of that podcast. In a nutshell, for me, I truly believe if a young person is at your program for 4 years and graduates, they should be able to make the best decision for them, whether it's academically or purely sports-based. I'm not going to put any judgments on anybody, but for a guy like Keller, I told him flat out that he's too talented to be a backup for me, that he could find a place to be a starting quarterback in college football. He showed flashes of brilliance. The Oregon game this past year, you cannot play quarterback better than he did in that game. Just outstanding. He had some games that weren't as good, had some that were really good. He got injured. Young quarterback got out there, that young quarterback being KJ Costello, and gave us a better chance to win. It was hard for me to come to that conclusion, but that's the conclusion we had to come to.
Interesting. Interesting.
Any immediate takeaways from that?
If you think he's so good, why not keep him on your team?
Well, he got asked that. He discussed if he felt that way, why didn't he attempt to keep him there for his final year of eligibility? And this is what Shaw said. To try to talk him into staying as a fifth-year senior just to be a backup for us, I said, you can't do that. That's not for you or for your betterment. If you can go someplace, find a place to play, and play up to his ability, this guy is a draft pick in the top half of the draft.
Maybe.
I mean, of course, I mean, if you coach this guy for a while, that being 4 years, and there weren't any bridges burnt, you're going to have high praise for him.
Of course.
And especially if he was a starter for a lot of games and did contribute well.
Yeah.
You're going to sell up your guys. That might be a little too much, but it's at least good that somebody who knows his football, who definitely, David Shaw knows his football, and he knows his quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like hearing that praise.
I like hearing it, too. I mean, it's interesting to hear right in the middle of a quarterback battle that's probably going to come down, you know, to game day. That's probably when we're going to know who's going to head out there. I mean, especially against somebody like Jarrett Garantano, who had an absolute terrible season last year, and we've been hearing that JG is just not head and shoulders above, but just winning out as of now.
He had a much better start.
Yeah. Which, I mean, he was here longer. He was here longer than Keller was when the coaching staff first got here. Keller hadn't been in Knoxville that long, so he has some catching up to do. And that, I mean, we do take that into consideration. But, you know, then after hearing last week about Keller, his arm strength just sitting there, he had a lot of bad throws, a lot of misread and stuff that, as a fifth-year guy, you shouldn't be making.
Well, he always had like those type of arm strength issues at Stanford anyway.
Yeah.
From what I'm taking from Shaw, he's probably, and this is just my take on it, he's probably upselling more of his game knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows how to dissect a defense really well, and he knows how to be a leader. He may not have all the measurables you want from an arm strength. He's not going to have a Josh Allen type of arm. That's going to be, this guy has everything the scouts were in love with. He's not going to have that. But, I mean, he might be overselling him a little bit, but I do believe he's not blowing smoke.
Yeah.
So, doesn't that bode well for whoever wins Tennessee's quarterback race? Because, hey, if you have that guy on your team, Keller Crist, if he just gets slightly beat out by Garantano, shouldn't that put some confidence in Garantano?
Yeah.
As far as the type of offseason he's had, if he's able to beat him out?
I would think so, yeah. I mean, it should also make us as a fan base feel good as well after hearing, you know, the stuff that Shaw is saying, which, I mean, it's his former coach. So, of course, you know, him leaving on good terms, his former coach is going to help him out as much as he can. But if this is really true and JG does beat him out, you know, this guy, according to David Shaw, should go to the top half of the draft and Jarrett Garantano's beating him out. I mean, that should make you feel good. Now, we have to take this with a grain of salt, of course. But, I mean, it's just a lot of what ifs and hearsay, but I honestly don't know what to take away from this interview and what he said about him. I don't know if to believe him or to be like, okay, dude, come on, you're just trying to help this guy out. We get it. But he's not that good.
You know, he's not a bad quarterback.
Well, he's not terrible. No,
you know, he's not bad. But yeah, I think the easiest takeaway from this is, It's just a coach who really had a good relationship with this player. He's somewhere else now. He's wishing him the best, and he's giving him basically a letter of endorsement.
Yeah.
It's just like if you just graduated college and you're trying to land that big job right out of school, and you ask one of your favorite professors who you had this great relationship with to write you this reference letter, write you an endorsement letter.
Sure. Yeah.
I understand kind of a version of that.
Yeah, I understand, you know, where he's coming from. This is just what coaches do, but I can't believe it 100%.
Let's just hope he didn't regress all that too much from Stanford. That's the biggest hope. 865-546-8200 to get on the McKinney Team Hotline here. Second segment of the second hour is on the other side. You're listening to Overtime here on Fan Run Radio. Another home and home for the future has been announced today regarding an SEC team. I want a notable interest here. LSU and Clemson, they have officially agreed to a home and home starting off in the 2025 college football season. So get ready for that one in 7 years. And then the next game taking place in 2026, game one will take place at Clemson on August the 30th, with the Tigers of Clemson taking a return trip to the Tigers of LSU September 6th, 2026. So
cool.
The freshmen on that team, are the freshmen on those teams in the 2025 game are just in sixth grade now, fifth or sixth grade.
Yeah.
That's crazy to think about.
That is nuts.
I'm gonna be 30. I'm going to be 30 when that first game takes place.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a wild look forward to. And Alabama, don't they play Notre Dame starting in 2027?
I believe so.
It is a long way out.
Yeah.
It is a long way out there. So, any excitement about this one?
I mean, I'm not going to care less, you know, who wins or loses. But, yeah, I mean, I always like to see these big-time matchups, especially between two – big-time Southern football teams. I mean, you got LSU, Clemson, even though they're ACC, you know, it's still – I mean, they're one of the best teams in the country, but definitely the South, along with, you know, Alabama and Georgia. So, yeah, I love to see these two titans of the game go head-to-head anytime I can.
Chris Lowe of ESPN, he had a good tweet summarizing all of these future home-and-home matchups here within the next decade, in addition to Clemson, LSU, and Alabama, Notre Dame, Alabama, Texas, taking place.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't have the years listed, and I don't remember off the top of my head. I feel like Alabama, Texas is sometime soon, right? I think that's within the next few years.
Yeah. I don't know the exact
check that
dates.
If you don't mind while I read the rest of these. Oklahoma, Nebraska, that'll be good to see. Mm-hmm. That's an old school Big 12 matchup. Those two programs have had a lot of fantastic games throughout the decades.
Yeah.
Speaking of Nebraska, Tennessee, Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
That's sometime in the near future. Also, in the very near future, Tennessee once again is going to do another home and home with Oklahoma.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Too soon. I just got bad memories of the last one.
Yeah.
Even though that 2015 game to a neutral observer was fantastic. With the game and the atmosphere, that's bad memories for me.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first game as a student. And it was terrible.
Yeah.
I sat right there, like right in the middle of everything.
Oh, really? Oh, man.
That lead slowly slipping away. I should have known then and there.
Oh, yeah.
I should have known. Too soon. Way too soon. Michigan State, Oregon. Ohio State, Washington. Michigan, Washington. Penn State and Auburn. That'd be a good one. Georgia, UCLA, LSU, UCLA, Wisconsin, UCLA, and Michigan, UCLA. How about the Bruins?
Getting in on some
not
big-time matchups.
Not afraid to play anybody. What happened to Tennessee, UCLA? That's kind of historic.
Kind of, yeah.
Played each other in the 90s, played each other as recently as 2009.
Yeah.
I like playing them.
Texas and Alabama are playing in 2022 and 2023.
Okay, I thought that one was in the next first, 5 years or so.
First in Austin, then in Tuscaloosa.
I like that. I like that because you and me were discussing all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Give me the home and homes all day, every day versus this tired and old neutral site matchups.
Yeah.
I'm sick of them.
Oh, yeah.
Because these neutral site games are big in when it comes to name brand recognition, and they're big usually when it comes to season consequences.
Yeah.
Down the road, you had Alabama and FSU start was that last year or was that 2 years ago?
Who was that?
Alabama FSU. Did I say LSU?
Alabama FSU was...
I swear I said FSU.
Yeah, that was last year. They played in Atlanta. Because they played the day before we played Georgia Tech.
That's right. Okay. For some reason, something was telling me it was 2016, but no, Alabama played USC in 2016.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a 1-3 matchup.
Yeah, big-time matchup.
In Atlanta.
Yeah. Brand-new stadium.
I would rather have that take place in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah.
Like, let me have that in Tuscaloosa.
For sure.
Alabama, USC, that's something that should definitely be a home and home.
Yeah.
Those two story programs. Who else am I missing? Michigan, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
That should have been a home and home.
Yeah, that would
all these
nice.
Great matchups are being wasted. And I understand it's a money business.
That's all it is.
I understand that. And I can sit here on my high horse and talk about the purity of college football all I want to. But I understand the deal. But you also have to understand that you're missing a lot more when you're not doing home and home.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the thing that caught my eye about the LSU-Clemson games being announced was how much more fun for those fan bases it's going to be to go down to Baton Rouge and then go back to Clemson.
Because
rather than playing like in Atlanta or Orlando.
Usually when you think LSU-Clemson, that sounds like a perfect Chick-fil-A kickoff game.
Oh, yeah. Sounds like Atlanta.
That's like a midway, well, closer for Clemson, obviously, but still, that's geographically a midway point.
I am all for the home and homes over the neutral site games. I mean, at the end of it, both programs are going to make a lot of money. Will they make as much money as they would, you know, playing in Mercedes-Benz Stadium? Probably not. But just for the fan base, just taking those road trips, it's just a lot better.
And that's what brings it back to. I understand the money is involved with it. I understand how corporate this sport has become.
Yeah,
I completely get that. But when you mention it to the fans, it's going to be a much better fan atmosphere
mm-hmm.
when you get to have your own home environment and then make a road trip to another campus.
Yeah.
Because when you have like these half and half fan bases at a neutral site, it doesn't feel totally right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You feel like you're getting slightly cheated out of something.
Definitely.
Clemson, the Clemson football Twitter account, this is an interesting wording of this tweet here announcing this. Listen to this. Just announced home and home versus LSU in 2025-26. In 2025, LSU travels to Death Valley, and in 2026, Clemson plays in Baton Rouge.
Sneaky.
Oh, no shade thrown there whatsoever.
Sneaky. I have a. I think I figured out who was the first Death Valley. I think I figured it out.
Let's hear it. While before you say that, that is today's Knoxville Stone Interiors poll question up on Twitter at Fox Sports Knox. Which stadium is the real Death Valley? Is it Clemson or is it LSU? And let's look at the quick poll results here. 80, not good if you're a Clemson fan. 88% of early respondents say it's LSU.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
12% Clemson.
I'd say so too.
So what's the story about the real Death
Valley? Well, according to 1130thetiger.com, and this is LSU since they're both the Tigers, a few interesting points here. LSU and Clemson have met only twice, once in 1959, in the 1959 Sugar Bowl, and then the 1996 Peach Bowl, which LSU won both times. But scrolling down further, they asked the question, but which stadium became known as Death Valley first? Tiger Stadium in Baton Rouge has been around longer, since 1924, Memorial Stadium in Clemson since 1942. According to a Clemson staffer, Memorial Stadium has been officially referred to as Death Valley since 1948. But former LSU Sports Information Director Bud Johnson recalls Tiger Stadium being called Death Valley after LSU played Clemson for the first time.
Hmm.
So they played for the first time in 1959, and Memorial Stadium was called Death Valley in 1948. So it sounds like Clemson may have been the first one, if these facts, if this is true.
Interesting.
Even though when you think of Death Valley, you always think of Baton Rouge.
That's the thing. They may have had the moniker first, but come on. When I hear somebody talk about Death Valley, I picture Tiger Stadium.
Tiger Stadium on a Saturday night.
Oh.
I don't think of Memorial Stadium on a Saturday
night. No, I don't.
I mean, while that's still a hard place to play, too, my mind always goes
to Baton Rouge. Oh, and there's great stuff involved with Memorial Stadium, too. Howard Schrock,
yeah.
They run down the hill, which they think that's the greatest entrance in college football. It's not. It's fine. It's its own tradition. I like it, but it's
a sprained ankle waiting to happen.
It's dangerous.
Yeah.
It's very dangerous.
And then also, I looked up the future matchups that you read off the Tennessee list.
Mm-hmm.
We play at Oklahoma in 2020.
But, yeah, I knew that one was very
soon. But they don't come to Knoxville until 2024.
Okay, I thought it was like some big gap. That's kind of like the Oregon home 4 years. And home thing, right?
Yeah.
Where you first played Oregon in 2010 and then again in 2013.
Yeah. But then we play Nebraska back to back years at Nebraska in 2026, then they come here in 2027.
That's been something that's been in the works for a while, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think they got moved back because originally we were supposed to play Nebraska this decade.
Yeah.
I do believe.
I think so too.
Man, I want to make that trip up there so bad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that would be fun.
There's not a damn thing to do up there besides go to those games, but, man, is it an atmosphere.
Yeah. And then this next season, as we know, we play BYU in Neyland Stadium.
It's going to be so weird playing them.
But we don't go to BYU until 2023, so another, few season gap.
That BYU game's going to be weird.
It's going to be odd.
It's going to be odd seeing those fans and everything. It's like, hey, you want to come out of the tailgate? No, I've got my Sprite. Okay. Thank you, though. They're going to be like the nicest fan base, and it's going to be very strange.
Well, never mind. Yeah, maybe.
Well, what were you about to say?
No, I'll tell you at the break.
Oh, okay. 865-546-8200. Cole's going to let me in on this little secret, I guess. We have birthdays on the other side. August 15th, it's time for birthdays. Unfortunately, we can't play the actual birthday game due to Daniel Bratman's absence. It's okay, though. We will see how much Cole knows here. And once again, Cole, you can't lose.
Yeah, I like those odds.
So it's just you and just see how many you can get. Kind of hate it that Bratman can't be here, though, because it's a decent day.
Yeah.
I will say it's a decent day. I'm just going to go down the little list right here. Starting off, she's 28 today. Kind of can't believe she's not older. But she's an American actress. Pretty popular. She's been in several roles in different types of movies. But by far her most popular role, she's been in a series of movies adapted from books about a dystopian future where you have to play a certain type of game.
Oh,
The books were like more targeted towards young adults and teens.
Yeah,
it's The Hunger Games.
Yeah, I know.
She's Katniss.
Yeah, I know. I can't. Let's see. What is her name?
She's a big Louisville fan. She's like the
Jennifer. Jennifer.
It begins with an L.
Jennifer J. Lawrence.
Got it. Yeah. Jennifer Lawrence. 28 years old today. Happy birthday to her. 29 today. He's an American pop singer. He was a part of this extremely popular group, very popular about a decade ago, featured on the Disney Channel.
Nick Jonas.
It's one of the Jonas. It's Joe Jonas. I was about to say he's not the good Jonas.
Yeah.
he's
the off-brand Jonas.
The other Jonas. Well, I don't know. Is Joe the other, or is he just the other?
He's the other. The oldest one is the other.
What's the oldest one's name?
Anyway? Nick, Joe, and...
I thought Joe was the oldest.
No.
Nick's obviously the best.
Yeah, Nick, Joe, and...
Oh, man.
I can't remember what his name was.
Oh, is this bad? Hold on. I got to look this up. He definitely is the other.
Nick, Joe...
Hold on. Kevin.
Kevin, yeah.
Oh,
I mean, with a name like Kevin.
Yeah. Sorry, Kevin Jonas. All right. You knew Joe Jonas. That's good. 23 years old today. American rapper, known for hits such as Love Sosa. He's a Chicago-based. You probably don't.
Brightman
would know. It's Chief yeah. Keef.
Chief Keef, okay. I don't know my rappers.
Brightman would have known
that. Yeah, he definitely would.
Okay, won't waste any time on that. Ooh, 46 years old today. American actor. Been in several pretty popular movies, including Pearl Harbor. He's been in...
He's 46?
Yeah. Hold on here. I don't want to get this wrong. Chasing Amy, Good Will Hunting, The Sum of All Fears, Daredevil. He's recently Batman.
Matt Damon? No, mm-hmm. no, not
You're
Damon.
Close.
Not Damon.
Who's Matt Damon's best friend? You're so close.
Right now. I always get these two guys confused, but I can't remember what the other guy's name is.
Do you need me to give you his initials?
Yeah.
B.A.
Oh, God, maybe.
Are you serious?
B.A.
You're going to feel...
I know.
Yeah, he's in Justice League. He's Batman. And also Suicide Squad, Batman versus Superman. Argo, The Town...
Ben Affleck?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, finally, there he is. Ben Affleck, 46 years old today. Okay. That was a struggle.
Yeah, yeah. I always get Ben Affleck and Matt Damon confused. I don't know why, I just do.
You got it, though. It's fine. Next up here, old one today. He would have been, do this math, 249 years old today. Former emperor of a European country. Conqueror.
Napoleon?
It's Napoleon. There you go. Known for being short, even though he wasn't all that short.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Napoleon Bonaparte.
Yeah.
Okay, 48 years old today. American actor. He's currently in the sitcom Blackish on ABC. He's been in the Bernie Mac show. That's the TV roles. Let's see. He's been in the movies Me, Myself, and Irene, Kangaroo Jack. The Departed, Transformers.
Don't know.
Anthony Anderson. You would know his face.
Is it the dad in Blackish?
Yes.
Yeah, that's who I thought it was.
Yep.
Yeah.
Anthony Anderson, 48. Going down here, let's see if there's anybody else really knowable. I knew we weren't doing the actual game. Excuse me. So I didn't get my list. I'm just going through the list they have here. That was it.
That's it?
Okay, I thought it was better.
I mean, it's not a terrible day.
It started out strong.
Yeah.
Deborah Messing's 50th birthday. I know she's been in some stuff. Oh, here's one you might get. She would have been 106 today. Famous TV chef, French chef. Really popularized the cooking genre.
She would have been 106?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
She spoke with the high-pitched French accent. I think she was also a spy in World War II, I'm pretty sure. That might be a fun fact. You don't know?
I have no clue.
Julia Child. Mm. Never heard of Julia Child?
Well, I've heard of her. I didn't know she was a chef. Mm-hmm. For some reason, I thought she was an actress.
Mm-mm. Oh, okay. Well, she was on TV, but as a chef.
Though. Oh, okay.
So.
Gotcha.
Not a bad day for birthdays.
Not a bad day. Not a bad day at all.
Tomorrow, I think I share a birthday with some pretty famous people.
Do you?
So tomorrow might be a good day for birthdays.
Okay.
So, and I do believe Brandon Orick will be subbing in for me.
Okay.
So, it should be a full cast, so it should be time to play the real game tomorrow once again. So, I hope you're looking forward to that. 865-546-8200 here. That's your number for the McKinney Team Hotline. Last chance to get on the show with us. Final segment of Overtime, closing out things strong. Up next. Final segment of Overtime here on this Wednesday evening. Closing out things in a strong, efficient way here on the show. Interesting piece out on ESPN. Bill Barnwell, he was tasked with creating the perfect 53-man roster. This is with the constraints of the $177 million salary cap, excuse me, for the NFL, while also maintaining some semblance of realism, according to this piece. You can go over on ESPN and check out the full details over here, because there's a lot to break down here, but I'm just going to quick hit some of this here. So starting off with quarterback, a roster of three quarterbacks here on your depth chart. Spends $8.7 million. Your starter, Carson Wentz.
Okay.
Your backups, Dak Prescott and Brandon Whedon.
Interesting.
So you're having Carson Wentz and Dak Prescott as your one and two.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good. I'd like having that on my team. Ooh. Here's the good stuff right here. Going to running back. He gets a rotation of five running backs here and only spends $4.9 million. Let you know how underpaid running backs are.
Yeah, seriously.
So we got David Johnson,
okay,
of the Cardinals, Jordan Howard of the Bears, Mr. Alvin Kamara of the Saints,
okay,
to be a solid option, followed by a couple of I'm not going to say no names, but I mean not as notable, Chase Edmonds of the Cardinals and Derek Watt of the Chargers.
Not a bad list.
Wide receiver. Ooh, here we go. Only spends $18.8 million for wide receiver.
Oh, wow.
Starts shelling out the money right here. Antonio Brown, followed by Adam Thielen of the Vikings. And then you got Tyrell Williams of the Chargers. Josh Gordon of Cleveland, only $790,000.
Wow. That's shocking.
Keelan Cole of the Jags, and then Saeed Blacknell of the Raiders. That's pretty good.
Pretty good.
A team of Antonio Brown, Adam Thielen.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good one, too.
I'd take it.
I mean, yeah, I'm going to take any rotation with Antonio Brown leading it.
Yeah.
Yeah, give me a break here. Ooh, these tight ends here. Got Gronk and Zach Ertz.
Ooh.
As your starting tight ends.
Oh, man. Yes, please.
And then you add George Kittle of the 49ers. So just three tight ends. He spent $16.5 million. Gronk is worth a lot of money. Gronk is almost $11 million.
Yeah. He's worth it.
Going down some more notables here, I'm going to go over to the defensive side of the ball. Von Miller.
Okay.
$10.1 million. And you got around the rest of this defensive line, Daniel Hunter of the Vikings. Trey Flowers of the Patriots. Pretty underrated player. Just a little over $2 million. Rasheem Green of the Seahawks. Your defensive tackle, Aaron Donald. Only $6.89 million for Aaron Donald.
Really?
Well, that's one of the reasons he's holding out.
Yeah.
He's trying to get that restructured deal.
He deserves it.
So that's a bargain right there to get Aaron Donald. I'm just going to hit the notable players here. Telvin Smith as your most expensive linebacker here, almost $6 million. Shaquem Griffin.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice. Shaquem is the one that's missing the hand, right? Or is it Shaquille?
I think.
Is it Shaquem or Shaquille?
I don't know.
Because they both played for the Seahawks, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
One was just drafted this.
Yeah. And that's the one who has the disability, but still is an outstanding player. He's the one that played for Central Florida.
Yeah.
Actually, they both played for Central Florida.
Yeah. Yeah. Shaquem is the one without the hand.
Okay. Yeah. He's in here for only a little over $500,000. Your cornerbacks here. Ooh, big bargain right here. Getting Marshawn Lattimore, defensive rookie of the year, for $3.5 million here. Casey Hayward of the Chargers, Darius Slay of the Lions, spending $20 million on quarterbacks. What did he spend with his with the $12.9 million he had left? Got Landon Collins of the Giants. Ooh, got Kevin Byard. Another big bargain here for just $1 million.
Wow.
And Rashad Jones of the Dolphins for just under $5 million, too. Who do you get for kickers? Let's see. His place kicker is Harrison Butker of the Chiefs.
It's interesting he got the defensive rookie and defensive player of the year rookie and offensive player of the year rookie in the New Orleans.
Well, the funny thing about that is that, the Saints already have that.
Yeah.
So that's good news if you're a Saints fan.
Yeah.
Johnny Hecker is your punter. $2.68 million for a punter.
Good grief.
Are you serious? Interesting. I didn't know punters were worth that much. I mean, I get it. Punters are people, too.
Yeah.
But damn, that's pretty valuable.
Should have been a Colquitt.
You make a pretty good living being a punter, apparently.
Yeah. I mean, look at the Colquitts.
Are you salty you didn't choose a Colquitt?
A little bit.
Slightly.
We've only got one Vol on that list.
Don't remind me.
Just one.
Don't remind me. But that's an interesting piece.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Thought I'd share that. Because that it's like one of those, it's like a really detailed version of, if you ever see those tweets like, yeah, $15, build like a perfect starting like NBA five, or what's your perfect starting offense for a football team.
Yeah.
With only like a few dollars. It's like that, except it's actual money. and you actually have to think about stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. Thought I'd share that along here.
Yeah, very interesting.
Going off the beaten path here, how about this for a headline? A French theme park. They taught crows to pick up trash.
What?
Around their park. Yes. And this is in hopes of encouraging humans to properly throw away their trash.
I think it's going to encourage humans to throw more trash on the ground.
I'm talking about some really good animal training here.
Seriously.
This is, here we go. This theme park in France, they are putting, the bird brains of corvids. It's a family of birds that includes crows, rooks, ravens, and magpies. They are training them to discard trash. The park is Puy du Fou. I'm sure I completely butchered that.
Puy du Fou.
Puy du Fou. There you go. That's a better accent.
Ah, de fou.
It's known for history-themed shows and attractions. They have taught six rooks that were raised in captivity to pick up pieces of garbage and place them inside a box that releases a treat each time trash is deposited.
Wow. Pretty cool.
Yeah, that training, it's just the rewards.
That's a good...
And it's like, oh, I know if I pick up this trash, I'm going to get a treat.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great idea. I mean, because those birds at like theme parks, they're hunting people for whatever they got in their hand.
The birds' names... Oh, they all start with bees. You got the killer bees right here.
Uh-oh.
Boo-Boo, Bamboo, Bill, Black, Recall, and Baco. Oh, and they're expected this week to start their full-time gig as the trash dispensers. They were trained by Christophe Gabrouet.
I don't know
these French names. He is the project manager at the park's Academy of Falconry.
Oh, my.
The garbage collection idea stemmed from the park's falconry show, which sees trained crows pick up roses and bring them to a princess in a castle. The trainer got to wondering if he would be able to teach the rooks to perform a similar, less glamorous task, which is picking up cigarette butts and other pieces of trash and putting them into a box.
Mm.
And then he started to train two rooks using a cabinet with a double door, much like a magician's prop. When the birds would place a piece of trash in a slot, Gabaret would pull a board to reveal a yummy snack below. And eventually the birds came to associate tidying up with food and happily picked up cigarette butts and small pieces of paper. It says, though, that sometimes the birds got a little bit crafty. Sometimes they would try to trick Gabaret into dropping, they would try to trick him by dropping pieces of wood instead of garbage into the box.
Oh.
These birds aren't dumb.
Getting smart on.
They aren't dumb.
No.
It's like, okay, I don't want to do this work. Let's just pick up some wood. I'll get my food.
Let's go get
Nope. It's not that simple.
Go get some mulch.
It says that the birds will work 4 days a week under the close watch of a falconer who will make sure that people don't toss garbage onto the ground just to watch the birds pick it up. The purpose of the project isn't really to get the park cleaner because it's already quite clean, but the president of the park said that they're just there to show visitors that, quote, nature itself can teach us to take care of the environment.
I wonder how this is going
to... I'd low-key throw like a little piece of trash just to watch them do.
Oh, yeah. I wonder how well this is going to work with, you know, all those people walking around.
I don't know. But hey, I'd like that instead of getting robots to take people's jobs.
Yeah, me too.
At least give it to something that's alive.
Yeah,
I agree. Well. That's going to do it for us on this Wednesday night edition of Overtime. For Cole McCormick, I'm Tanner Carson. I'll be off the rest of the week. But Daniel will be back here tomorrow, and I trust you all will take care of it. Have a good night, everyone.